So indeed, this is the title I've chosen. And since these very cute characters have been drawn by Daniel Cavalcanti, he has chosen to the third character to be Charlie and not Claire. Well, that's it. So these are the three people that will appear in this talk. You know already that, in fact, in our field, there are a few examples where when you go to three parties, things happen or thing has been possible that are not just not possible with two parties. And here are a couple of examples. So the GZ argument for non-locality. Of course, the very possibility of this Vetichnian inequality doesn't make any sense if you have only two parties. So this, it opens a lot of possibilities. And then entanglement theory, you all know about these things. Today I'm going to speak about these four topics that happen to be the topics that we are working on. And when I was trying to find a common reason for all of them, I found that actually they all involve many parties. So that's why the reason of my talk, a posteriori, of course. So let's go through them. Probably these titles don't tell you much in this moment, so we'll just go through them. First one is activation of non-locality. So they are completely separated topics. Huh? So if you fall asleep during one, you can just understand the next and so on. Sorry? Yes, I will. There is a signal when I change, yes. And Tony, you can, who is that? Denis, you can wake up Sandu in case each time. Okay, and then, so for this particular work, there is a poster in this conference, a paper already published, another paper in preparation. So all these results are more or less well known. There are other things to open problems. So what is the point? Okay, this is what we call, what one would call non-local. So there are two parties there, and they make measurement on they have a probability distribution that cannot be written as a convex combination of local recipes. And we all know very well that a state shared between two parties can be local in the sense of giving rise only to local correlations, even if it's entangled. This is the famous case of Werner states. So you can consider what happens in this scenario. So I take now a just keep in mind a Werner state that has a local hidden variable model. Even you can take those of Jonathan Barrett that also for POVMs have a local hidden variable model. And now you distribute them with many parties. Is there any hope to get something? Can one see non-locality better with many copies? And a few years ago, I would have thought, yeah, obviously, with Tony Athene, we were discussing this and say, obviously, because there's entanglement distillation. However, when you do non-locality, classical communication is not allowed. Because if you have classical communication, you can do a PR box. Therefore, entanglement distillation is not part of the game, at least not standard entanglement distillation with local operation and classical communication. And so in this scenario, the problem is basically open. There has been a paper a few months ago by Miguel Navasquez and Thomas Vertesi where they showed that a state that certainly does not violate the CHSH inequality, when you put in this kind of context, it can be led to violate the CHSH inequality. But, okay, this is a specific inequality. It may be that the state violates something else before. The scenario we're going to consider here is rather a network scenario in which you have this state now not distributed between Alice and Bob, but between many parties. And the terminology that we have introduced is to say that rho is a non-local resource if it can provide some non-locality in a network. I mean, I put it like that, and then these guys at some point violate some Bell inequality. It can be multipartite Bell inequality, it can be some whatever. And then, in this case, we would say that rho is a non-local resource, although it may be local in the sense of if you measure it only alone, gives only local correlations. And this is based on the following observation. And it's a sort of, yeah. So if there exists, it's a bit long. It's the longest test I have in my presentation, but I have to go through it. If there exist local measurements by K parties, so for instance, here by Charlie, such that for one measurement outcome at least, the resulting state between the n minus k parties violates a Bell inequality, then the initial n party states also violates a Bell inequality. It's important to stress that this is not a post-election reasoning in the sense of saying, Charlie measures, sends the result, and Alice and Bob know that they have this state. What I'm claiming is that if this happens, then the state, without the measurement already violated a Bell inequality. And this is a stronger requirement than hidden non-locality. So in particular, this is general for any state. You take a pure state, there you generalize what is called the Gisant theorem, which is an obvious consequence of this result. Now if you put it in a network, then this means that if the n-party state is constructed out of these rows, then this criterion can be used to prove that row in a non-local resource. And so let's go to the first result. It is that if a state is one-way entanglement distillable, it is a non-local resource. Why? Consider the following procedure. Bob in the middle, so that now the one-way distillation goes from center to out, okay, so from Bob to Alice and Charlie. Then, by this procedure, Bob can create a singlet between, in principle, distillation will be with communication, but it means there exists an outcome that Bob doesn't need to send, but there exists an outcome such that he knows that he has created a singlet. Then Bob can also make entanglement swapping and create a singlet there. And this thing, you can remove the two green arrows there, just a measurement by Bob with outcome B1, B2, and B3 grouped together in B. For that measurement outcome, Bob creates a singlet between Alice and Charlie. If this is possible, then the initial state with two rows distributed there already violated Abel inequality. Example, this one. This is a state produced by erasure channel. So you take your maximally entangled state, send to an erasure channel, and with probability 1 over k, stays like that, with probability 1 minus 1 over k, you just throw away the second, so you say send half of it to an erasure channel, Bob's path, and then, they get a flag saying failed. Now, this state is one-way distillable from B to A for all k, so it's already a non-local resource. In fact, we don't know if it is a local Gaussian variable model, this one. So we don't know if it's like a Werner state, but we know is it's k-shareable between Alice and k-bobs. So at least for sure, it cannot violate any Bell inequality with k-measurements, even POVMs, on Bob and arbitrary many measurement on Alice. However, you put them in this network, and it is a non-local resource. Of course, you ask, what about the Werner state? Okay, Werner states, here they are. For d equal 2, our result actually exploited a result that was noticed in a paper by the Sen, I think Czaslaw is in that paper, and Marek Zukowski and someone else, who noticed a sort of network configuration now in terms of a star, and they give their Abel inequality. If you complement their result with what I said before, you get that these Werner states are non-local resources down into a region where actually there is even a local model. So clearly here we have a state for which if you use it only a single copy, there is absolutely no hope of violating any Bell inequality. However, if you put in that star network, it will lead to violation of a Bell inequality. And for D arbitrary, okay, there. There what we have, this is unpublished result, is what we are going to publish soon, using the ideas of unbounded violation of Bell inequalities using these mathematical things, I don't even remember the names, of vector spaces or whatever. This thing, David Pergarcia and others, someone sort of you know what I'm speaking about, you can show that such a state up there is a non-local resource for this very simple network, going down to zero with the dimension. There's still a gap between the local model that has been proved by Tony Athena and Mafalda Almeida to be scaling like log D over D, but at least it goes down that way. And the Bell violation so far that we know for those states by direct measurement of a Bell violation is stuck at 0.67 for D going to infinity. So again, here this criterion gives at least a much stronger characterization of what are the non-local possibility of a state than a direct measurement of Bell inequality insofar as we know the inequality. Okay, so end of the first part. About activation of non-locality. This is a way of activating non-locality in a shopping mall in Singapore. Did these handles really change polarizers? It's an experiment of Christian Kurtziffer that we bring to shopping malls, and then with these handles, you can change the polarizer in the screen. It shows you the value of the Bell inequality there, and these kids are trying to violate it. Not that probably they understand very much what's going on, but they like the game, no? That to go above a bar. And the message of this first part, just the takeaway message, is that local states that are like Werner states, for instance, can lead to violation of Bell's inequalities if they are shared among many parties. Again, the idea, the case when they are shared between two parties is open. There is no no-go theorem. So maybe one of us or someone else one day will prove that also something can be done in that scenario. But at least in this one, it can be done. And, well, something, we have done something. We have more results, I think, on the poster out there. Okay, second topic. So, change completely. Device-independent tests of entangling measurements. This is a paper that should appear in the archive, hopefully tomorrow or in 2 days. We are finishing the last details. And there is also a poster in this conference. So what is that? The motivation is the idea of circuit testing, okay? So there is a vendor that sells allegedly quantum devices. So you can buy these guys. Maybe for definers, I think that the vendor is honest, but you don't trust, okay? So the vendor is there, is trying to convince you that he's selling a, whatever, a source of entangled photons or a local unit error, and this local unit does what it's supposed to do. But of course, the vendor doesn't want to reveal how it's done, if it's done on photons, on atoms, and so on, because, I mean, this isn't what frequency, if it's photons, and what kind of degree of freedom is used. And you go there and say, no, before I buy my whole quantum computer from you, I would like really to make sure that your devices work. So here I come with a test. If you pass this test, I trust you that you're selling the right thing. So this is the box we want to characterize. This is box performing a Bell state measurement. So the guy, again, has a box, two inputs that are supposedly quantum signals and four LEDs there. And then the one of them clicks. Well, obviously, if you ask, is it performing a perfect Bell state measurement? Certainly not, so forget about that. Moreover, what is a Bell state measurement if I don't know the dimensionality of the signals? What I'm speaking about? So a better question is this. How close is this box from performing a Bell state measurement on some two-dimensional subsystems in the incoming signals? So the signals can be whatever, but I would like that inside this whatever there is some sort of effective qubit, and because this is what I asked from the vendor, again, it's not that, of course you can try to generalize this task when the best state measurement is made of higher dimension. It's not that the problem. The problem is I go to the vendor and I tell him I want to do quantum teleportation with qubits. Sell me these. Okay, so that's a task I set for him. And of course, one important thing is that everything must be checked with the same vendor's product, because if you do a test with a product of another vendor of your own, then the vendor can easily say, yeah, but it's not compatible because, you know, I put a trick there that you don't know. And so you have to buy everything to check this thing from the same vendor. Let's get an example of something that does not work. Okay, you may think, oh, I buy a source, I buy a local measurement, local unitary and Bell state measurement. First of all, you can check the entanglement of the source with some local measurements. This has already been published. And once I know that this source is indeed producing an entangled state, it's like, check them, trust now. I set the local unitary is the knob to the position identity X, Y, or Z. There is a knob there. I can play with it. And then I check if one of the lights clicks deterministically for each. Then since I know I have an entangled pair and I am doing these local unitaries, if this changes, then I'm doing the guy there is at Bell state measurement. Why does this fail? Well, because the vendor can just put all the information from there. It doesn't need to use the entangled pairs. You don't know what's going on there. So it's just, it can be that the box is just receiving a message from the local unitary and says, hey, he has chosen Y, so please take out the third light. If this is the test you go to the vendor with, the vendor can cheat you very easily. So you have to go with a better test. And the better test, curiously enough, that one we found, we have a sort of half no-go result that with two parties, there's absolutely no hope. You have to go to three parties. And here is the test. So these are the, you will so see where the box come in, okay? So there are three parties are supposed to share some quantum state. First part of the check, you check that whatever has been shared between Alice and Bob violates the CHSH inequality. First check. Second check, you check that whatever has been shared between Charlie and Bob also violates Abel inequality. Note that the measurements of Bob are the same, but are not binary. They would be binary. There is already a no-go result. The first version is due to me, but of course it's been forgotten because it's due to me. Then it's normally attributed, it's slightly different. It's normally attributed to Verstrete and Bentoner. smarter people in an unpublished paper, and then there are plenty of other monogamy results, including by Dagomir Kaslikowski and others. So, but anyway, here it's possible to have both violations on both sides because the outcomes of B0 and B1 are not supposed to be binary. Actually, are four-dimensional. And then the last test is now Bob changes his measurement. So once you have checked, somehow the idea is once you have checked that there is close to a singlet on these lines, then Bob changes his measurements, puts there the box that we are supposed to check, and tries to create entanglement by entanglement swapping through Alice and Charlie, who are still doing the same measurement as before. Because the same measurements can always be used by just readapting how CHSH is written. This local equivalence between the best states can be just found by rearranging the terms in the CHSH inequality. So what quantum mechanics can do? Well, you know it, okay? So you can get the 2 square root of 2 on both sides, and then you put a perfect best state measurement, and you get 2 square root of 2 down there. So in principle, in this test, there is an ideal case, the quantum case. So if the vendor is really super competent, he will create 2 perfect singlets, perfect measurements, and perfect best state measurement, and you get 2 square root of 2, 2 square root of 2, and 4 times 2 square root of 2 for all the tests. That's a benchmark. What happens if the best state measurement is so bad that it creates just is a separable measurement, doesn't create any entanglement there, then in fact, well, in this case, if there are 2 singlets there, so if you have the condition here that the first 2 are 2 square root of 2, then the other one must be local. Now, what's interesting is I describe this argument for qubits, but this bound is device independent. Why? Because the fact that CHSH is equal to 2 square root of 2 implies that A is measuring on an effective qubit, maximally entangled with something in B. There is an isometry there that you can do such that essentially you have really a 2-qubit state plus some junk. So this means in particular that before the measurement B2 was performed, this part in B was not entangled with any, sorry, A was not entangled with C. And so, well, that's good, because there is a gap between what is a separable measurement and what is an ideal best state measurement. So a competent company, by passing this test, can convince you to buy their best state measurement. Of course, the test now can be refined and try not to get exactly 2 square root of 2. Because there is a gap, there would be some values that are still acceptable. And we are going to see later how demanding this test actually is. Oh, yes, in fact, once you know that these guys are separable, you can even prove that those two below cannot even violate more than square root of 2. This is a device-independent version of a theorem that in the qubit case was proved by Ufink and Sieving. So if you take an operator that is supposed, the Bell operator is supposed to violate maximally Bell inequality and you apply on a separable state, you don't even get to the local bound. But these are technicalities. So 3 remarks, yeah? Well, of course, you need to check that you violate CHSH on these 2 lines, because if you only try to check to do an entanglement swapping without checking that you had a singlet before, this can easily be done without any best state measurement. If you want, I can do it here. So far, unfortunately, we have been able to derive quantitative bounds only under the assumption that either one of those 2 is exactly 2 square root of 2. It is very convenient, because in this case, we know that the state is separable. Of course, this is something to be removed in the future, but this requires probably new mathematics. Now, let's see how demanding this test is. And to see how demanding it is, you can forget about device independent, just as a bound, okay? You can try to see, okay, let's suppose now everything is qubit and so on, and let's see what happens. And these are the curves. I don't want to comment much on them, but what you can read there is the following, is the distance from a perfect best state measurement given the violation of CHSH that you observe after the supposed entanglement swapping. And suppose that you come to the vendor and tell him, look, I want that your best state measurement is certified at 5% failure probability. It's already a lot, huh? For an experimentalist to say that, I mean, of course, for a real experiment is good, but suppose you really go for, I don't know, fault-tolerant quantum computation, 5% of errors is already a lot. Okay, the poor vendor is supposed to produce a best state measurement that violates CHSH up to 2 square root of 2 up to 0.5%. I don't think any experiment not let alone entanglement swapping, any experiment just of direct violation of Bell inequalities with post-selection, detection loophole, and everything has ever been as close as that. So you see that this test, and this is not yet device independent, maybe device independent is even a worse bound. These are a qubit calculation. So you see that these kind of tests, if you really go for serious device independent things, the vendors will have the hell of a time to produce something that is decent, that matches your expectations. Okay? So but that's not probably much worse than fault tolerant anyway, but. Okay, conclusion. So we have here another device independent task that has been proposed and studied in some cases to be studied more after quantum key distribution, randomness extraction or expansion, and state estimation. Third topic. Okay, this one is funny. It's an idea that appeared in my most improbable journal, the Brazilian Journal of Physics. It's actually a proceeding of a conference. As you can expect, it's never been quoted. Well, it's in the archive, but the thing was in the field for some time. One of the persons that was very interested in that is Stefan Wolf, and recently he has found a breakthrough in this point. And it's, funnily enough, the breakthrough appeared on the archive 2 weeks after Antonio Athin and Stefano Pironio contacted me with a new idea to attack the problem. It's essentially the same, as usual, no? Once you start working on something, someone else has done it before. But now, okay, with these people, we are working further because our idea is actually slightly different than the one that they were exploiting, and probably better. Anyway, I'm going to tell you what it is. And the idea is to try to prove, let me call it a reverse Bell theorem, okay? So here is the usual thing. So you have correlation at the distance. If you want a classical mechanism, there are two possibilities. Either the correlations were established before, or there is a communication that establishes them. And now, if you violate a Bell inequality, you know, the first one is excluded. Now you want to exclude also the second one in order to say that quantum physics creates correlations at a distance without classical mechanism. And the usual argument that I accept, by the way, is, because these correlations can be done with space-like separated choices or whatever, and since no signal can travel faster than light, then no signal has traveled. Okay, now the question is, let's play with that and try to create a hidden signaling model, a model in which communication faster than light is allowed, and then falsify it. But falsify it not by appealing to a principle, because otherwise it's already done, okay? You can say, I create a model that where communication goes faster than light. But you cannot create a model that where communication goes faster than light. Therefore, I falsified it. It's a bit of sort of, you know, pointless reasoning. So let's try to falsify that by direct looking at the statistics. Is there any hope of doing that? And at first sight, you may say no, because I know that Bohmian mechanics is a signaling model that reproduces at least standard quantum mechanics, and you can present it as, you can change it a little bit, the presentation, in order to put there a signal that goes at infinite speed. But, okay, so yes, if the speed is infinite, nothing can be done. Fair. Now, what happens if the speed is finite? And it's finite, of course, I have to invoke a preferred frame, and, I don't know which one, but, okay, there is a finite speed. Here is my preferred frame. So there are two parties now, Alice and Bob. Alice measures there, so they share something, makes a measurement at that point in space-time in this preferred frame, and here is my superluminal communication going out to the rest of the universe, telling everybody what Alice has done. This is supposed to be in my toy model that I want to falsify. Don't quote me saying that I want to prove faster than light communication. In this my toy model, this is the cause of entanglement somehow. This is what creates these non-local correlations. Then if Bob measures there, oh, fair enough, the information has already arrived at his location, so Bell inequality can be violated. If Bob has measured before, more simultaneously, then the information has not arrived, and then this configuration should not show any violation of Bell's inequalities, for instance. Can be correlations due to pre-established agreement. Now, my point is, if you look at that, this model predicts some departure from quantum mechanics if the events there of measurements are simultaneously enough in some preferred frame that I don't know. Yeah, it still can be made consistent, at least like this, maybe not for some other reason. But seeing like that, you can just say, okay, I have a model that if I measure simultaneously enough in some frame, the correlation will disappear. Okay, you may find very improbable, and I do, but there's nothing there to falsify. However, let's put a third party, there's Charlie now there, and consider this configuration here, where, you see what happens there, it's Alice and Bob are sort of simultaneous, so Alice and Bob cannot violate a Bell inequality, but C has received both information, so C can do whatever. And now what I'm going to show to you, but I'm not going to do the proof, because since I decided to give this four parts talk, I don't have time for giving the proof, but I have time at least to tell you what the argument is, and I hope I will interest you in the quest for the quantum point for that. My claim is that in a theory, in this scenario now, hidden signaling may not remain hidden. So what I'm trying to claim is I'm going to arrange a situation in which if the cause of entanglement is faster than light signaling hidden, then the theory is signaling macroscopically. There will be a scenario in which you will be able to send a message faster than light. Of course, what we would in principle hope on the opposite of for this kind of models is that the signaling remains hidden. I don't know, no signaling at all. So what is the idea of the argument? Again, I can only sketch it. The starting point is that we have to have quantum mechanics at some point. If I go in a universe where I don't know what happens, I don't know what happens. But so I'm going to suppose that whenever all the signals arrive in sequence, as you see there, Bob has received the signal for Alice, so the particle of Bob has received the signal from the particle of Alice, and the particle from Charlie has received the signal from both. If there is such a sequential sequence, then there is a quantum state that describes the situation. This is the normal case. And now I come back to the previous sequence, the one where now Alice and Bob particles are not talking to each other. The Charlie's particle still receives both. And here is the proof I'm going to skip, but I can show you later if you want, that the assumption of no macroscopic signaling, so the assumption that what I want to do in all is non-signaling, from my point of view, from the point of view of the observer, forces the marginals AC and BC to be the same as above. Okay? The basic idea is that Alice should not know if Bob has measured in the first or in the second configuration. If he should know, it would be signaling. But again, the proof I can show you later. So the idea is now, I have that whatever happens in such a situation, AC and BC must be compatible with a quantum state. In the first case, A and B can also be compatible with a quantum state. In the second case, A and B must not violate a Bell inequality. But now, let's take the following mathematical problem. Suppose that I find a quantum distribution such that is a bit such that. So sorry for that, but it's a bit. So I take a quantum state, I compute the probability distribution. I compute the marginals, AC, BC. Suppose now that mathematically, all the probability distributions, no signaling, compatible with those marginals, have necessarily A and B violating the Bell inequality. Okay? Let me repeat. You have these two marginals are fixed as a family of probability distributions, and you find that all the families of probability distribution are compatible with those marginals, have A, B violating Bell. There's none of them such that these two are compatible with local hidden variable model, fixing these marginals. Then there are only two possibilities. Either the violation of Bell inequality is not due to the signal. Yeah, but then this defeats the purpose, precisely because my signal is there to violate the Bell inequality, and this would falsify a model with hidden signaling. Or the model must break that condition, which means it is signaling. It means in this scenario, then I could send a message faster than light from Alice to Charlie. And what have we proved? Well, in the famous Brazilian Journal of Physics proof, we proved a few things, namely that if all the alternative models that you are postulating, you restrict them to come from some quantum state, then we can prove that this happens. And what Stefan Wolf and his co-workers have proved is that if you don't require that one to be, to come from a, if you on my first line, instead of saying that it comes from quantum physics, you say, oh, it can be any general no signaling thing, then they've proved. So there are, for the mathematicians, there are no signaling probability distribution ABC such that by fixing AC and BC, all possible AB compatible with those constraints violate a Bell inequality. It's a cute result. By looking at AC and BC, no signaling, you can be sure that AB violate a Bell inequality. But the example they have is not compatible with a quantum state. So we cannot say that, I mean, so the last step is to find such an example that comes from a quantum state, if possible. And I really, I have no conjecture if it's possible or not, because Stefan Wolf has tried for 1 year, we have tried for 2 months by now, all kind of, and we find absolutely nothing. Maybe with four parties would be better. Anyway, I think it's a cute result. I think that a few years ago, if someone would have asked me, can you falsify the idea of Higgins signaling, I would have said no. Maybe we can. So maybe there can be an argument that will show that even hidden signaling is not a possible model for quantum correlations without having to invoke the fact that nothing propagates faster than light because of relativity. Last topic, information causality, because of course I have to speak of information causality in the tripartite scenario. This is really work in progress. This shows you how I trust this community that we have open discussions and not result stealing, because here we have no results. Okay? So I'm going to show you all the negative results that I found so far. What is information causality for those who may not know it or may... it has been defined with two parties, and Alice receives two bits. For instance, the first bit is 0, second bit is 1, and Bob is asked to guess one of the two. The resource they have is no signaling stuff and limited signaling, m bits. Here, m equal 1. If it's m equal 2, of course, it's very trivial. And then they do some local thing there, some local thing there, and Bob outputs a beta that is supposed to be a good guess for AK. And what we said in the paper there in Nature, Marcin Pawlowski invented this fantastic figure of merit, that information causality is respected if the mutual information between AK and beta, conditioned on the fact that you have to guess K, is weaker than the number of bits, smaller, sorry, than the number of bits that has been sent. So, okay, that's the task. And I remind you what information causality can do for you. So you take the scenario where both Alice and Bob have two inputs and two outputs. The no signaling polytope looks something like that. Essentially, is 8 repetitions. Well, of course, there are only 4 here, but since a higher dimensional object is a bit hard to draw, there are 8 repetitions of the same thing up to symmetries. There are CHSH inequalities on the facets of the polytope between the local and the no signaling, and on top of this one, there's one object, the PR box, again, up to relabeling or something. And then then you can study it only in that particular region because all the rest will be equal. And then the quantum set looks like this. And information causality is violated up there. There is a small region where we still don't know, but okay, it's very interesting, as already mentioned by Gilles Brassard, that this is one of these criteria that really comes down to the 2√2 bound of quantum physics. And even if you don't look in that line, in the vertical line from the versus here, but you look in the other lines, it comes very close to the quantum set anyway. But this is the 2-2-2-2 scenario, the two parties, two inputs, two outputs. Is information causality going to define quantum mechanics one day, or at least, again, not quantum mechanics, certainly not quantum dynamics, and not even the Hilbert space, but more the correlations that can be obtained from quantum mechanics? So there is this difference between what we are doing here and the axiomatic approach. I can elaborate on that later if you want. But, there is hope that indeed maybe there's not proof that it's not possible. So maybe one day information causality will indeed bound the same correlations that can be obtained in measurement on separated quantum systems. Well, but let's start with bad news. First of all, it's still an open problem even in the very simple scenario. We have got some very partial knowledge for a more complicated scenario, but again, a very specific one and completely unnatural, actually invented for the purpose. Well, and ultimately, one would like to find a solution without having to study each scenario separately. As of today, any result on information causality can easily go into PRL or PRA, but I think after 1 or 2 years, the referees will get bored, okay, and say, hey, yet another one, please send to International Journal of Quantum Information. And, okay, the great insight that we had is that quantum mechanics allows for more than two particles. That's smart, huh? So let's try to see what happens there. And then there is a pretty bad news. This is probably the example where 3 is infinitely bigger than 2, at least infinitely for me, for my own personal purposes. So consider these kind of boxes now is just the same as before, but with 3 parties instead of 2. Okay? 2 inputs, 2 outputs. So the polytope becomes slightly more complicated. This has already been known, that there are 53,000 and something facets, instead of the 8 CHSH facets, belonging to 46 inequivalent classes. So there are 45 different types of Bell inequalities. One is the trivial facet, probability larger than 0. But then you ask Stefano Pironio, and he tells you, but there's a very good news. The PR boxes, it's actually the same. The no-signaling polytope has exactly as many extremal points belonging exactly to 46 equivalent classes. So you say, I know the answer. And the answer is, there is no correspondence between those boxes and those facets. It's not that each box is on top of each facet and whatever not. It's a mess, and you can read this paper in which my contribution was to push Stefano to his limits and to write the paper. Because he didn't want to do it. For some reason, most of you probably have quoted already the famous paper Barrett-Pironio in preparation, and that one was the reason why. So the polytope looks more or less like this, and again, I mean, I've simplified a little bit. I didn't even bother to do the 46, even less the 53,000. So it seems that if we have to study information causality in that object, even the special case seems completely hopeless. Okay, but we have to start somewhere. So let's see at least what we can say with that. Okay. And these are the partial results that are known so far. First of all, out of the 45, we can prove that 43 of those extremal points, non-local points, violate information causality bipartite. So there, no need to go very much beyond. You take our very good information causality from the previous paper. We just remove one party or you do something with one party, and then the remaining 2 end up violating information causality. So, okay, those guys, out. There are 2 points we don't know. We don't have the proof that it doesn't work. We don't know. We haven't found the protocol. One is a protocol above the guess your neighbor input facet. Guess your neighbor input will be the subject of tomorrow's talk by Tony Athin. There are 2 classes of extremal points that violate maximally that inequality. And one of them we have not been able to remove with this criterion. The other one is a funny one. Famous number 4 on our list, that cannot be simulated by sharing infinitely many bipartite PR boxes. It is somewhere else. This is completely qualitative. Maybe there is a dimension in which these 2 are above the same facet. We haven't tried to study the geometry of that object. It's just too awful. Another thing we know is that information causality is violated if what is called the Uffink inequality is violated, which it also implies that it is violated if the Svetlicin inequality is violated above the quantum bound. And this is true for any number of n. So there is something there that looks more or less like the quantum boundary or something. And then there is a result that is not due to my group, but the group of Antonio Athin. I think there is a poster out there about that, and certainly Tony will mention it in his talk, that they have found that there is a non-extremal point on that facet, I think it's non-extremal, that certainly will not violate bipartite information causality. I refer to their poster for more information. So what does that mean? It means that certainly, if you hope that information causality identifies quantum mechanics, since there is, Tony, to anticipate something of your talk, there is no quantum set, no quantum point above the guess your neighbor input inequality. That inequality is a tight facet also for the quantum set, so all that is above this here is not quantum. So if you hope that, that the information causality will once define the quantum set, then you have to find a three-partite task that generalizes the bipartite task and that can rule out the point that Tony Athin and his group have found. And that's the conclusion. So, as you see here, I just said it. So we need a multipath. If we want to hope that information causality is quantum mechanics, then we have to prove that a multipartite definition can be given. And at some point, yes, go beyond the case-by-case study because it's becoming a bit bored. Okay. Now, a small thing, since Renato is in the room, I want to say something about three much larger than two in a very different sense. And hopefully Renato will answer this question tomorrow in his talk, or at least now I put him in stress so that he does. So you know what is quantum cryptography? Now, 3 and 2 have a different meaning. 3 is the number of measurements, 2 as well. So BB84 is a protocol with 2 measurements, X and Z. And, everybody has proved in a more and more rigorous way each time that essentially the uncertainty of the eavesdropper on the key is given by that formula that you can recognize as what is called the Shor-Preskill bound, and then there was no H mean on the other side. This is a contribution of later people. But anyway, it's always the same. And when you see this one, you think a little bit and you say, oh, this is mass and oofing. Again, generalized to death, you have to put epsilons and min and max everywhere, but essentially, yes, there is an entropic uncertainty relation that finally in this form has been proved recently by Renato and one of his students, Marco Tomamichel. And that's fantastic. I like it a lot. Actually, I was trying to prove it 3 years ago. As you can guess, I cannot prove these kind of things, so we had to wait for Renato to do it. But why we are trying to prove it? Well, because you see, from cryptography you get an inspiration to generalize the mass and oofing uncertainty relation to something with mean and max entropies. And once you prove that uncertainty relation, the proof of security is trivial. You can forget about all the rest. That's a proof of security. And moreover, if you go to finite keys, it's even better than the usual one. So, great. So, now we have the great temptations, especially me, no? One of the lazy generalizing people. Then quantum cryptography is about uncertainty relations. That's the temptation of saying that that's only that. And maybe it is. But the problem when you go to 3 measurement, here is what comes out for the unconditional security bound for the 6-state protocol. And I challenge everyone in the room to find an uncertainty relation, to get this formula, to get an inspiration for a generalized uncertainty relation with 3 measurements. Okay. Now, there are not many generalized uncertainty relations with 3 measurements. As far as I know, there is one by Andreas Winter and Stefan Ivener that doesn't look at all like that thing. Even in the standard scenario, you don't have, you never have delta X times delta P times delta L larger than something. So normally in uncertainty relation, we always focus 2, 2, 2, no? Well, here, in cryptography, it's natural to go 3 and more measurements. So both results would be interesting, no? Either one can find indeed an uncertainty relation that leads to this would be impressive, or you cannot, and then it means that quantum cryptography is something else than uncertainty relations. Anyway, with these remarks, I concluded. I hope we convinced you that 3 is sometimes much more interesting than 2. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for this nice talk. I'm sure there are questions.
So my question concerns the information causality. Mm-hmm. Part of your talk, and maybe you were coming to this conclusion yourself, but it seems to me if you have a complete axiomatization of quantum theory, then you've proven that every single principle that you wrote down was playing some kind of role in the reconstruction. However, if you have a principle which only gets some part of quantum theory, it's not clear if that's just some kind of coincidence, or whether it's a really important principle. So I guess my question is, do you have some intuition or some reason to believe that information causality is actually going to play an important role in understanding why quantum theory has the structure it has?
I think as long as we don't have my present understanding of it is, as long as I don't have a generalization to more than 2 parties, I will not... I don't think we can even conjecture anything. I'm sorry, I'm more on the prudent side than on the speculative side, but I have the impression that I mean, there we have a clear proof, thanks to what Athene's group have done, that the bipartite definition is not enough. Now, suppose that we cannot find a multipartite definition, then, okay, the answer is done. Suppose we find it, then, for me, matters of elegance will come into play. So in this moment, we are really reduced not to think of a nice task, but just to find one task, okay? And then we'll find this task, and maybe this task will then become completely, you know, impossible to interpret, and it's just a mathematical thing, and then back to point zero. So, I don't know. Maybe in 1 year, we'll have a partial answer to this question.
My question also refers to information causality. So you were not quite explicit what you do with the third party when you compare the bipartite information causality in this case.
Oh, you can do steering, essentially.
So you can do, it's not just tracing out, but also...
No. Okay. Without steering and even wiring between different boxes, yes.
It's good to have three questions, as three is much more interesting than two.
Yes. But the first two questions were already very interesting.
So my question is about the third part, about falsifying yes. and signaling. So I just wanted you to clarify the role of space-like separation. To my mind, it would make sense if you're saying we're going to rely on space-like separation to know that there can be no observable signals sent yes. between the parties, but we are going to presume that perhaps it doesn't rule out hidden signals. And then the experiment is designed to find out whether there's some other way of ruling out hidden signals. Is that right? Is that the role?
Okay, if I understand the question, maybe we can discuss later. This is a topic where the first time when people hear it, normally, okay, it's a bit, even for me, it's not very... So, let's see. Indeed, if you would know which is this supposed preferred frame, then... you could just ask the experimentalist to measure more and more simultaneously in that frame, and then you put a boundary there. But, I mean, the point is, if you continue seeing correlations that violate by inequality, you're putting boundary and boundaries on the speed. I need a preferred frame in order to somehow speak of a hidden signal that is faster than light. But I'm sort of assuming that, maybe the model is completely inconsistent by definition, no? But I'm assuming that macroscopically, normal relativity should work, so that I should not see any of these things. Okay, but in order to have this faster than light, I'm assuming that for quantum correlations, there is a preferred frame, so in which, I don't know, it can be the frame of the source, of the motional frame of the source in which the particles were produced. In that one, they can communicate faster than light, I don't know, or something. But then the point is, if you have this argument, if we could rule out these theories by just... theory itself. No, it would be like a Cochran-Specker theorem. You don't need to do an experiment for that. You already say that this model doesn't make any sense. I mean, this model is incompatible with quantum predictions. No? So if one can find this probability distribution coming from a quantum state such that you can tell me if I measure AB and AC, I know that BC, for sure, will violate a Bell inequality, even without seeing them, then all these models are ruled out just by this definition without... any consideration on dynamics and so on. Maybe it's the wrong way to go. Yeah. Maybe it's not an interesting model.
Okay. Any more questions? If not, let us thank Valerio again for his nice talk.